Andre, did you catch that?
Recording has started.
Okay, good afternoon, everyone. This is Judge Dan Buckley. Welcome to the Funding Methodology Subcommittee meeting. I want to start off with an emphasis to all the members and especially the staff during these very difficult times and very busy times that you are making yourself available for this meeting, which I think is a very important meeting. And I want to make sure I don't forget that we take a moment and recognize the great work by the staff in a very, very short time turnaround. The quality of their work is always good. It's always excellent. But to have accomplished that with such challenging, sophisticated topics in the short turnaround time is amazing. So just we all should extend our thanks for that. We have a kickback meeting next Thursday. So always keep that in mind, that the agenda for next week's meeting must be published by this Thursday. So decisions really need to be made today, or I should probably put it better, recommendations should be made today. Staff and us, and we do not really have the time to do anything else in advance of next Thursday's kickback meeting. And as you well know, this meeting is a response to the proposals that impact the trial court included in the 2021 May revision. If by some chance the connection doesn't work for the group, if there are problems just given the video conferencing, staff will send out an email and we'll revert this to a teleconference on that. So, Brandy, will you please take roll?
Absolutely. Judge Buckley?
Here.
Ms. Fleming?
Here.
Judge Cope? Judge Kelly?
Here.
Judge Thompson?
Here.
Ms. Carter?
Here.
Thank you. Ms. Eberhardt?
Here.
Mr. Planet?
Here.
Mr. Taniguchi?
Here.
And Mr. Yamasaki?
Here.
Great. Thank you.
I want to remind the members and staff that this is a meeting open to the public, and it is being recorded. The meeting is being conducted via video conference, and the public can watch the meeting via a listen-only video feed. FMS members and other speakers on the call, please physically raise your hand so that I can call on you. Terry, you're not on the video conference, so if you want to send me a text, if I'm not catching you, feel free to send me a text, and I'll make sure I call on you. As well as speak up when necessary. Even more with this meeting, we've got to avoid talking over each other. When you're not talking, please unmute yourself. And even if you're in a back and forth, try to unmute and mute when appropriate so we can avoid background noise. And we can see the names of the members. So we should still just introduce ourselves in case someone's on the phone. Members may be viewing materials and watching the video feed so that at times you may be faced away from the camera. And I just want to let everyone know that that's what will happen. So we did receive written public comment. Brandy, do you want to identify that or do you want me to?
I'm happy to. The public comment was from Monterey Superior Court, Tehama Superior Court, and Riverside Superior Court.
And those public comments were shared with the members prior to the beginning of today's meeting. So this concludes the public comment portion of the meeting. First on the agenda is workload, formula, objectives, principles, and measures. Rebecca, will you take the lead on that, please?
Yes. Yes, thank you, Judge Buckley. What I'd like to do is start with saying that in 2013, we established our initial workload formula and then came back and updated it in 2018. With the update, we established objectives, principles, and measures utilized in the retooling or the update of the formula. While equity was a continued driver of the original formula and into the revised formula, the revision of 2018 answered concerns of stability and predictability largely highlighted by several years of flat funding. In a series of multi-day meetings, the Funding Methodology Subcommittee established the following principles for the workload formula. There's a table found in your materials, and on my document it's page 8. Hopefully that is the right page for you. But basically, I'll summarize quickly. The principles were, one, to minimize volatility, maximize stability and predictability to the extent possible. Two, committed to evaluating all submissions as submitted via the process of the workload formula adjustment process. Three, time for adjustment and adaptation. Four, responsiveness to local circumstances. Five, transparency and accountability. Six, independent authority of the trial courts. And seven, simplification of reporting while maintaining transparency. With the 2018 workload formula update to the Judicial Council dated July 1st, 2018, a variety of scenarios were outlined, including years with new money, years with no new money, and years with cuts to be implemented. While the scenarios of new funding or flat funding were detailed out, the scenario with the cuts to be implemented simply stated that consideration would be given to those courts under the line. Further discussion of the details around the application of any cuts were postponed to an undetermined future date. The evaluation and effectiveness of the revised workload formula would be based on parity of funding and the effectiveness of the data-driven advocacy for the new formula or for new funding. The Funding Methodology Subcommittee agreed that an approach to changes in the workload formula that were going to be policy-based rather than results-based in order to protect the objectivity of the decision-making and ensure the good of the branch versus a single court. We are reviewing these principles and this abbreviated history today in order to give us all a place to begin the conversations in the subsequent agenda items. Does anybody have any questions on how we got to this point?
Rebecca, I'm just going to comment very briefly. I know I'm not officially a member of FMS. I was asked to participate as the chair of TCBEC. Many of you were on those very difficult FMS discussions. And I'm just echoing what Rebecca has said and Judge Buckley. Those decisions were made recognizing that many times individual trial courts are harmed or back in the good old days were benefited. But candidly, the way I think this discussion was fruitful, became productive, and was viewed as credible, both from TCBEC and then to the council, was the overarching goal and recognition that we operate with the good of the trial courts in general. The only thing I would say here, and then I'm going to bow away from this, I'm going to be on the whole time, but I'm leaving it up to the pros from Dover, Judge Buckley and Rebecca, but I was asked just to once again emphasize that this is going to be painful. It's going to be painful for every court, and I've already heard comments about distributing the pain, and that's what is going to happen, I'm sure, but nobody's going to be a winner here, and nobody's going to come out ahead. I mean, I just once again want to thank everybody that was participated then and is participating now for keeping as the ultimate focus the recognition that these decisions have to be made for the good of the trial court branch as a whole. I'm sure you all understand, and I'm now going to defer unless there's comments or questions later on. Thank you all very much for your time. I'll stay on listening.
Thank you, Judge Conklin. Are there any other questions? Judge Buckley?
No, I have no questions. Thanks, Rebecca.
I have no questions, Judge Buckley and Rebecca, but if I can just add maybe some observations. And certainly, I was part of the discussion in the formulation of those principles, and believe me, they are difficult principles to establish, and I think in retrospect, unfortunately, we were anticipating difficult times ahead in formulating those principles as well. And the only thing that I wanted to add is that within those principles, there have been some refinements and certainly some language that helps clarify what some of the intentions were behind some of those principles. And I didn't see some of them, one in particular, in some of the materials, unless I just missed it. Are we going to be able to go into some of the details of that during the course of our conversation, or should I just point out a couple along the way, or now?
Let me clarify your question, David. Are you talking about specifics of the principles themselves, or are you talking about in the detail of the agenda items that are following?
I'm speaking specifically to the principles that have been identified and some of the language that I thought would be helpful in understanding and remembering as we go forward the decisions that have to be made. So let me just bring one up as an example. And it relates specifically to minimizing volatility and creating some level of predictability. When we had talked about that particular principle, there had been some conversation and discussion about the adjustments that would take place within a year based on the formula not to exceed reductions in a certain amount. And my quarrel isn't with the amount, because obviously some of those issues have to be carefully evaluated. But I think it's helpful to understand why we had come up with those detailed backup elements. That's basically what I just wanted to speak to very briefly. I wanted to make sure we had a chance to talk about that, because some of us may not have been around when some of those thoughts were put into play.
Thank you. Any of that historical perspective that you want to add in, I would invite you to do so as the conversation goes. And I think you're talking about the reductions referring to the percentages above and below the line, and possibly the second years of no new money that some courts may wind up giving up some funds. Is that correct?
Those two, but also no court would sustain a reduction greater than 1% under normal circumstances, where flat funding and so on. So anyway, I just wanted to make sure that that was part of what we had a chance to discuss.
Yes, and I would invite, perhaps Brandy, we can, following this meeting or as part of the TICFAC meeting, maybe we can even provide the document that the revised workload funding was based on, the result that went to the council that outlines the various scenarios.
Yes, ma'am.
Judge Buckley, are you comfortable with that as being part of the materials going forward?
Yes.
Okay. Are there any other comments or questions? Hi, Nancy.
Hi, Rebecca.
Yes, Nancy.
I just have a comment I wanted to make going into it, and mostly because I was not on TICFAC during the time that that these principles and measures were put into place. But I do know that we came from a historical perspective of WAFM, which is now over, and the idea was to rectify historical funding disparity and also to provide data-driven justification when we're advocating for funding. So two of the measures that you have outlined here on page, for me it's page 8 of 39, which would be the second page of the report, is that we also need to measure our principles against the parity of funding and also data-driven funding methodology. And I think that's something we really need to look at, and unfortunately sometimes that is a challenge, right? Because those two measures conflict a little bit with principles 1, 3, and 4, which is to maximize stability, provide time for adjustment and adaptation, and also responsiveness to local circumstances. So we have a tension that we're going to have to look at as we're going through these models this afternoon. And I would just kind of put forth that we do need to remember that we came into this with the measures of making sure that we are transparent and that it's workload driven and that we're looking at the data and that we're providing parity where we can.
Thank you, Nancy. I think that is an important point. And in fact, in regards to some of the comments that have been received from the various courts around the materials, I think that transparency is screaming loud and clear. And so I think that is something that we want to make sure that this group, that we fully flesh out all of the concerns and really evaluate each step of the way. And so thank you for that comment, definitely. Is there any other comments or questions from anybody?
Actually,
Judge Buckley, I would hand it back to you.
Well, yes. Thank you. But I would throw out, as to both David and Nancy's comments, is that we, Rebecca and I, went into this with the thought, or maybe the expectation, that we'll be deciding recommendations only as to 2020 and 21, and not address the proposed additional 5% cuts. So whereas some of these principles and some of the principles you raised is, as the title on page 8 is, formula for 2018-19 and beyond, we're not doing that. And that's not to say that any of your points should not be considered, but I think the context of those points will be different slightly or greatly, given that we're making a decision on only one fiscal year, okay? So if there's no other comment or discussion as to item number one, we'll move on to number two, allocation methodology of trial court funding in 2020-21, May revision. Oksana, would you start off, please?
Thank you, Judge. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Oksana Tak, a senior budget analyst with Budget Services. This report is to assist the subcommittee at its discussion as it considers options on methodologies to allocate one-time funding in the amount of $50 million to trial courts as proposed in the 2020-21 May revision for COVID-related case filing backlog. The subcommittee's recommendation will be forwarded for consideration by the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee at its June 11, 2020 meeting and will be presented to the Judicial Council for approval at its scheduled business meeting in July. The allocation methodology options to be presented are not all-inclusive, but rather represent the approach at the request and directions of the FMS co-chairs to assist the subcommittee in its deliberations as it develops a recommendation for consideration. The models are based on existing methodologies or similar approaches from past practice. The current year workload formula and workload allocations were used to aid in preparing the examples as outlined in Table 1. Please see page 10 of the materials. In response to COVID-19 pandemic, the judicial branch changed its operation to protect court users while maintaining access to justice. Actions taken by the Judicial Council and trial courts to protect the public and court staff have resulted in delays in court operations and a backlog of cases that will take time for courts to process as they continue to comply with public health and safety directives. For easy visual comparison, the first three presented methodologies are displayed side by side in Table 2, located on page 12 of the materials. The first methodology is pro rata, based on court's workload allocation. The approach for this option keeps base funding floors funded at the current Judicial Council approved amount of $800,000 and also keeps Cluster 1 court's funding allocations level. All other courts would receive a portion of the new funding based on a percentage of their workload allocation. The second methodology is pro rata based on court's workload formula. The approach for this option maintains the base funding floor amounts, keeps Cluster 1 allocations level, and then applies a pro rata portion of new funding based on the percent of the remaining court's workload formula. And the third presented methodology is via the council-approved workload formula. The current methodology for allocating funds in an equitable manner is workload formula that was recently updated by Judicial Council, and it's January 17, 2020 business meeting, which outlines the method how any new funding is allocated. Please see page 11 of the materials. With this method, no course allocation is allowed to exceed 100% of its workload formula unless it is the result of a funding floor calculation. The last presented methodology is staggered distribution based on course workload formula. The approach for this option would initially allocate only a percentage of one-time 50 million funding, such as 60% or another amount recommended by FMS, via a methodology recommended by FMS. The remainder of the funding would be disbursed at a later date in fiscal year 2020-21 to address further COVID-19 backlog emergencies that will emerge. With that, Budget Services Management is available to assist in answering any questions. Thank you.
So why don't we start off with questions before we get into comments? Any questions about that? Go ahead.
Yeah, this is David Yamasaki. I had just one question. In years past, whenever there had been targeted funding for specific activity, the courts were urged or required to provide some backup information about how those funds were spent. Do we have a similar requirement with these monies if it's ultimately approved? Do you know?
There's nothing in the budget language in terms of, hi, this is Lotko, appreciate you having me. There's nothing in the budget language right now that speaks to any reporting requirements. Obviously things can change, but there's nothing like that, like in the past, David.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, Nancy.
Thank you. I just had one question, and that is, if this is a one-time funding or a one-time allocation, is this something that we would need to account for in future computations against our funding ratio? Just kind of a naive question.
Lotko, do you have an answer? Or?
I can take it, Lotko.
Yes.
I'll go ahead. This is Brandy. Nancy, our thought is no, this would be treated as a allocation that's outside of the workload formula, similar to like the court-appointed dependency council. It's included in the tables that we provide for allocations, but does not count against the workload formula.
This is Sherry Carter. Actually, a better analogy when we had one-time AB-109 money. It's related to workload, but it's not part of the ongoing.
Okay. Any other questions? How about comments? One thought I have is we could take this step by step. One is looking at page 12, get an agreement that it's staggered, and it's staggered as to the recommendation, and then get to the actual recommendation. So, does anyone have any comments as to the fact that we should stagger the money and that we start with 60% or a different number?
Judge Buckley, this is Sherry Carter, and I'm sorry you can't see me. I'm really doing that to protect you all so you don't see me multitasking as I have to do other things. We're having some serious civil unrest downtown that I'm having to bounce back and forth between. But this is my question. I'm curious if the rest of the group would have different thoughts about the one-time money, depending on how we allocate the reductions on the ongoing basis. In other words, to me, they're related but not necessarily related. One is dealing with the backlog, which is workload. The other one is how we allocate reductions, which also should be based on workload, based on where you are, even recognizing those things that David mentioned. None of us expected the cuts, and so minimizing volatility and stability and stuff, none of us are going to have that this year. So does it make sense to also talk a little bit about how we're going to allocate the reductions and then come back to this? Because my mind might be different on one or the other depending on how we look at the ongoing as well as the one time.
Okay, that makes can make sense. If no one has a strong disagreement, we can move on to item 3 and probably 4, and then somewhere in that sausage being made, we can decide which cut really is going to be decided first. Before we move on to 3, let me backtrack just a moment. And can we have a motion to approve the minutes from the February 20, 2020 FMS meeting, which is starts on page 3 of the materials?
Yamasaki moves approval.
Planet seconds.
All in favor?
Yes?
Aye.
Aye. Yes.
Any opposed? Great. Any opposed? Okay, great. So,
Buckley, I believe there was one abstention. Can I ask who that was?
Judge Thompson, as I was not present.
Thank you, Judge.
That's the same for Nancy.
Oksana, can you discuss item 3, the allocation methodology of the trial court trust fund reduction?
Thank you, Judge. Good afternoon again. Oksana Tak speaking, senior budget analyst with Budget Services. So this report is to assist the subcommittee in its discussion as it considers options on methodologies to allocate an ongoing funding reduction in amount of 168.937 million to trial courts, as proposed in the 2020-21 May revision due to the recession preceding the COVID-19 pandemic and related budget gap. The subcommittee's recommendation will be forwarded for consideration by the trial court budget advisory committee at its June 11, 2020 meeting and will be presented to the Judicial Council for approval at its scheduled business meeting in July. To address projected $54.3 billion budget gap due to the COVID-19 pandemic, the 2020-21 May revision reflects budget reductions throughout state government, including the judicial branch and all branch entities. Specifically, the May revision includes 178.1 million general fund reduction to trial courts for 2020-21 based on a 10% reduction to base operations funding. Of this amount, the 168.937 million is a reduction to the trial court trust fund that will be addressed through considerations of several reduction allocation methodologies options presented today. Again, the allocation methodology options to be presented are not all-inclusive, but rather represent the approach at request and direction of the FMS co-chairs to assist the subcommittee in its deliberations as it develops a recommendation for consideration. The models are based on existing methodologies or similar approaches from past practice. The current year workload formula and workload allocations were used to aid in preparing the examples as outlined in Table 1, List C, page 15 of the materials. The first methodology is pro rata reduction. The approach for this option keeps base funding floors funded at the current Judicial Council approved amount of 800,000 and also keeps Cluster 1 court funding allocations level. All other courts would receive a pro rata reduction based on either their workload formula or workload allocation. See Table 2 on page 16 for both options comparison. Another methodology is split reductions. The approach for three options in this methodology applies a percentage of the reduction to courts above the statewide average, with the remaining percentage applied to all courts, excluding base funding floor and cluster one courts, based on either court's workload formula or workload allocation. The split options provided in this report includes a 50-50 split, which applies a 50% reduction to courts above the statewide average, with the remaining 50% applied to all courts, maintaining the exclusions noted earlier, based on either court's workload formula or workload allocation. The other two split options of 40-60 and 30-70 work in a similar manner. The three split options are presented in tables 3, 4, and 5, respectively. In addition to the budget year reductions, May revision also includes an additional $28.1 million reduction for fiscal year 2021-22, based on a 5% reduction to the base operations funding, of which $26.674 million impacts trial court allocations. This could be addressed now or later based on the subcommittee's recommendation. Lastly, I would like to direct your attention that the current workload formula policy does not provide a reduction methodology in years of budget reductions. After today's discussions, the subcommittee may want to consider a policy recommendation change to incorporate a reduction methodology into the policy going forward. With that, Budget Services Management is available to assist in answering any of your questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So we'll do the same. We'll first see if there are questions about the presentation and then go to comments and a probably more detailed discussion. Let me throw out one or two things. My thought is that within the presentation, there was the reference to the Cluster 1 courts staying at the same level. I'm going to raise that as a topic of discussion and whether that is something that we want to do. And second thing is, going back to the initial comments by David and Nancy, and in an attempt so that we'll flip it to the positive when we have some money or there's no money reduction, no one goes down more than 1%. We don't know how to do that, I think, easily, especially since we're doing all this based on a 10% cut. But obviously, if it turns out to be a real number of 8%, I'm just throwing that out, we obviously will adjust accordingly, and that too could change it. So this idea of not only a 50-50 split, but a 40-60 and a 30-70 is an attempt to try and do an analysis whereby some courts that are at the higher end of the funding do not get hit as much as we would want them to, and hence maybe it's better to go down to a 40-60 or a 30-70 split. So with those two clarifications, let's first ask, does anyone have any questions of Oksana or Brandy or Zlatko? Okay,
so
I don't. I know I promised that.
Oh, sorry.
I know I promised really I wouldn't, calling. But I. You want to go Sherry first?
We go Sherry, Judge Kelly, Judge Conklin. Go Sherry.
Okay. How would the 82.3% change if the cluster ones were included?
I don't know if staff looked at that.
Staff should know that because I calculated what I think is the approximate amount that is there.
Judge Buckley, this is Brandy. Sherry, do you mind repeating the question? It cut off on my end.
Okay, so the amount of money, so if all the courts took the same reduction period and you included the cluster ones, what would the 82.3% go to?
I don't have that on hand, Sherry, and that's because we were trying to just provide a visual as it relates to this meeting, but
I understand that's a visual. We're not talking about individual courts. We're talking about overall that if the branch is taking a reduction, and we want all courts to be treated the same, which is, I think, what David's point was originally. I'm just curious what that would be. But,
yep.
Okay, I'll mute now.
Yeah, and Sherry, and the reason, too, I want to add is because also as we go into TICFAC next week, we'll be working on the updated filings, which changes the workload formula, which will change that 82.3% amount. So we will definitely have more information available, and even if we want to go with options for consideration to TICFAC, that detail will be made available for the committee next week.
Judge Kelly?
I just wanted to make sure that I understood for this particular action item, when I read through the materials, it appeared that this was going to be particular for a decision on the methodology for this current issue, because in the past there had been an indication that you did not want to set a policy with reductions because they would be handled as they came up as an as-needed basis. But I thought I'm hearing from Oksana talk about establishing a policy, so I just want to make certain that I understand. Is it that we're making a decision just based on this cut for this fiscal year, or is this somehow going to then roll into a policy that's then presented to TICFAC?
So I'll answer it from at least the chair's perspective. It's a policy for this upcoming fiscal year because we don't know the actual numbers, and it is one of the recommendations is that we decide only this upcoming fiscal year and not the following both years. So the word policy is just because we can't give you actual numbers. It's the approach for this coming fiscal year of 2021.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Any other questions?
So I just...
John, I'm sorry, Judge Conklin.
That's okay. From the... Moving this up to TICFAC, I just wonder, was there a consideration or is it in any of these policies that in no circumstance would a court ever suffer more than a 10% cut? So I know it's a very scary basement or ceiling depending on your perspective, but whatever, and I don't even know if it's mathematically possible, but for instance, if you allocate the first 50% to those above and then the remaining to all of the courts, would something like that still give protection and say, but nobody's going to have to suffer more than 10% based upon our goal of transparency and planning? Or is that possible?
Well, I don't, it's mathematically, I say not possible. Assuming that 10% is the actual cut to the branch, if we're going to allow some courts to have less than a 10% cut, other courts have to absorb that. And those other courts would have something above the 10%, assuming, again, it's a 10% across the board.
So if we stayed instead of concentrating on the percentage number of 10%, if we looked at the $168 million that Oksana's told us about, I know the math comes out a little different. Would that $168 million allow for no more than a 10% cut to any court, or do we know? For instance, Brandy, do you know?
So, Judge Conklin and members, if looking at the materials and starting at Table 2, again, we're, you know, rough numbers, we're applying it to current year information, it hasn't been updated, but you can see that, for example, if we did a pro rata reduction, I'm looking at first page 16, if the pro rata reduction is applied either based on the workload formula or the workload allocation, we could see a couple different columns where it's a 6.5% reduction up to about 8.8%, depending what court you are and what allocation methodology is chosen. As we look further down on the tables, as we start to think about doing a, you know, 50% above the statewide average, 50% to all, you can see those percentages get a lot larger and well over the 10% that you were just mentioning, Judge.
Thanks.
Judge Thompson?
Thank you. Question, Brandy or Oksana, in looking at the recommended splits as a possible option, are you talking about if there's a court that is, say, fairly above the statewide average, let's say at 83%. Is that court then going to get subject to the full 50% under their equitable distribution of those courts above, such that they could be taken down significantly below a court that was at otherwise at 80% or 81% that was just below that statewide average in utilizing any of those splits as opposed to an equitable basis?
So, Judge, the concept is correct in that the person above the statewide average, even if just barely above, would be included in the calculation where they take the first 50% reduction, and that court would also be included in the second calculation where the 50% goes to all.
But with that, we can approach this comparable to the way we've done it as far as when we have money, and that is we don't include a court that's within 1% or 2% and have those, bands. So your point's well taken, and it may be part of our discussion that this is revised and a court is not included in that first round of cuts if they're within one or two bands of X percent.
Yeah, I was just trying to clarify. We weren't in discussion yet from my perspective. I was just trying to clarify the Good. Outline of the parameters. Thank you.
Sure.
Judge Buckley, David here. I wanted to kind of broach the subject that I think Sherry was trying to tease out a little bit, and that is I thought it was a really great victory for our branch in that what we were able to do is lift the Cluster 1 courts to a level of funding that we very much stand behind, and that's the 100% funding for them. And the dollar amount that we earmarked to accomplish that goal was not necessarily a big ticket item, collectively speaking. And it seems it would be discouraging that we would have to just backpedal from that decision that was made, because I think we were able to achieve a lot of good in that move. If we were to keep them whole at the 100% approach distribute the reduction to everybody, I think there would be a little bit of, I guess, solace in being able to hang on to a policy decision that this body made and judicial counsel supported, and move forward with an equitable application of the reduction to the balance of the folks. If Sherry was if that was her intent in bringing that up initially, whether we should carve that out and just move forward with issuing a reduction to the balance of the courts, that's something that I certainly would be very much in favor of if Sherry is recommending that particular approach.
So this is my point, is that this is hard for all of us, but if the entire branch has been cut, then all of us are going to feel the pain, and I'm not sure that it makes a difference regardless of your size. And I am excluding the floor courts, by the way, because we already know that you need to have a certain level of funding, what we call the floor funding or something like that. So I'm not sure that we should not have all of the sister courts, or David, in your case, brother courts, not have some reduction. And if we did that, it almost feels as if it should just be pro rata, because we all have certain commitments that we went into before the pandemic. So in other words, those that are above the average funding line have commitments that they were dealing with at the time, as well as those below. And LA is below, or has been, I don't know with the new, formula, but And so I realize by saying that, it's not necessarily in my best interest, but it makes it harder to see us as a branch if we're not all feeling the same pain. And so that's why I raised that, because if we're one branch, which we always say we are, then it feels like we should be one branch together on this. And that's where I was going.
Yeah, and that's great to hear. Unfortunately, I didn't do all the sketching out, and we're not supposed to do that. I mean, how we're affected. But one of the things that I've heard, certainly from the messages that we've received from Martin as an example, we have to be kind of united in the message. And in this regard, if we were to move forward with a pro rata reduction to everyone, excluding the four courts, I think we can make the same argument that we're all being treated essentially the same. We relied on the funding formula to provide for courts during good years. It doesn't seem appropriate to come up with nuances along the way. Let's hang on to that same approach as we're looking at reductions. And this was one of the hardest topics, and that's why we kind of kicked the can down the road. How are we going to deal with cuts? Because it's going to be painful. But in that regard, I agree with you, Sherry, that all of us should share in the very, very unfortunate reductions that are placed before us using a common methodology. And the more that we start to dissect nuances, I think we'll begin to forget some of the background as to why we got to this point. And we can, you know, at least be united in the message that all of us were cut, took a piece of the $168 million, and, you know, strive for additional resources and hopefully get us back to where we were before. But you brought up an excellent point also about how we entered this fiscal year with, you know, green horizons and made decisions, and to be faced with not only reductions but a greater share. I think that that is going to be extremely difficult for us to remain united, because we're going to be affected, I think, partially at very varied levels.
So let me, Judge Conklin had raised his hand earlier, and then Rebecca after Judge Conklin, please.
I was just stretching.
And then.
Yeah, so Rebecca, I'm sorry. I was honestly just standing up. Thanks.
Okay, then we go Rebecca, then Nancy.
Thank you, Judge Buckley. So I actually think David, I'm not sure if he was specifically talking about advocacy around this, around everybody being treated the same, but I think that is really important that in order to speak with one voice, I do think we all have to have kind of gone through the same experiences. And so whatever approach we take, I think that it's important that we come out on the other side with a tool that doesn't disadvantage any one group of us any more than the other. And maybe that speaks to pro rata, maybe that speaks to something else. I don't know. But I do think that whether he was intending or not, I think David's reference to standing with one voice and all being kind of treated the same, I think that does give us, you know, kind of a solid foundation of one message. And I would just say that I would support something that would keep us united in that effort.
And I think Judge Buckley, I was next.
It looks like we lost him. Let me see.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I think you did.
We may have lost him. Well, I'm sure he will be trying to dial back in. Nancy, I think you were next.
Okay.
There he is.
There he is.
Sorry about that. I hit the wrong button. Did you finish your comment, Rebecca?
I did. I think Nancy was next.
Thanks. Nancy, please.
And I did want to echo that at the end of this, we all need to speak with one voice, and that, you know, I agree with everyone that there will be pain, and every court will share in that pain. I do kind of want to remind everyone that back when we made some decisions back in January of 2018, we said that we would address cuts when the cuts came, but we would pay special consideration toward the courts below the statewide average funding ratio. And that still continues to be an issue. There is still quite a gap that is happening. So when we're saying that we're going into a year sharing the pain the same, there will still be a difference because there are courts that never really made it back to parity. So really, I just wanted to say that and offer a suggestion that for those that are above the band by only a small percentage, maybe there's something we can do within that option and talk about that there may be a reduction that is taken, but maybe they don't fall below what the band is. And I don't know what that formula would look like, but we want to make sure that we don't have people falling on the other side of the band that is not a very fun place to be. Thank you.
So, Judge Buckley, I don't know if there's someone else in line after Nancy.
No.
So the reason I wanted to start here.
Oh, Mike.
Oh, sorry. Then Mike can go.
Mike, I'm sorry, I didn't see your wave. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, so I want to speak with and agree with Nancy's perspective there. I would support. I felt pretty strongly about sticking with the workload formula option that we've been developing over the last many years and have been working with. And I share the same concerns as Nancy about the underfunded courts will continue to be underfunded. The gap may grow and will take proportionally larger reductions. If there is some kind of work we can do around the margins for those courts that are slightly above or slightly below the statewide average, I would support that. But I am concerned about pro rata just kind of continuing the distance between the funding levels for at the different levels. So I understand why the group's going to understand the larger issues, but I want to speak in favor of the sticking with the 50-50 and the workload formula approach that we've adopted several years and still remains, in my view, the most consistent with the principles that we've opened up the discussion with.
So Sherry, what I'm going to throw out, and then I definitely want you to give your comments, but so we're focused on something. Why don't we have as the first step is, are we going to go with the first pro rata reduction, which is reflected in Table 2? So assume it's 10%, everyone takes a 10% cut. We'll deal with Cluster 1 courts separately. Or do we do
dropped off, we kind of talked a little bit about how we are one branch with one voice and that it might be a good idea to all be together, which is include Cluster 1.
Okay, so that's been decided.
No, not decided, but you dropped off when we talked about it.
Okay, so I hear what you're saying. So let's focus on what I think right now has been the last several comments, and that is, do we go with all courts taking a percentage, let's say it's 10%, the pro rata reduction, versus a split? If that becomes the consensus, we can talk about what is the split. But let's tee it up between those two items. Jerry, you had a comment coming, and then Rebecca, do you have something to say as well?
So Sherry? Let me just say it this way, that the reason I thought we should start here is because, again, LA is an under the average court as well, right? So I understand the pain that Mike and Nancy are talking about, but reductions are difficult because of the inability for some to adjust as quickly, even if they're over the average. So this is my point. If we agree we're one branch and that everyone should take a pro rata reduction, then if we looked at the new money, the one-time money, that money could be applied to those under the average, even though it's one-time in nature, because now all the courts are being treated the same with the allocation, the reduction allocation, but now the new funding could go to those under the average. Because truly, they will have the most difficult time with the workload, and that's what the COVID money is for. So that is a thought that I want you to ponder, is that would be another way. I recognize it's one time, but it could be that next fiscal year we would have additional flexibility, or at least put courts on notice above the line that it's coming.
Rebecca?
Thank you. Sorry, I had to get unmuted there. Two comments. One, speaking directly to what Sherry's comment was. Sherry, actually, the in preparation for this meeting, we originally looked at a direct offset of the $50 million to the reductions. And Zlatko can correct me here if I'm wrong, but there is some concern about tying the two together based on the language in the governor's May revise. Now, in practicality, if somebody has a COVID-related workload that they wind up getting funding for, they may indeed be offsetting the cut that would have been in that area with a reduction. But in the approach to the methodology, I think we have been asked to consider it separately, at least at this time with the existing language. So that would be my first comment to your comment. And then the second thing is, Judge Buckley, to your suggestion on the approach, I'm wondering if the group would think, the group would find it more, maybe simpler to address simply whether or not to address the Cluster 1 courts with the cut before we start talking about the methodologies. So, you know, are they on the table? Are they off the table before we start talking about pro rata or methodologies or what have you? And I know you have that the other way around, but I'm wondering if the group might find that more of a straightforward approach.
Sure. So I heard Sherry say that while I was gone, you decided it, but hearing that you may not. So unless there's an objection, why don't we have further comments or discussion as to whether the Cluster 1 courts will experience some type of cuts, depending on obviously how we approach it, putting aside the floor courts. Judge Thompson?
I was just going to say, if we go the route of including Cluster 1 courts, and I see some recognition for that, because if other courts are furloughing and having cuts, and you have COLAs and whatnot, and other courts by reason of this meaning a Cluster 1 will carve them out, there can appear to be some inequities. That said, if we, and maybe it's a reduced, because they're so low in funding, maybe it's a reduced cut. It doesn't have to be 8.3, because if you look at a percentage of what hits them, that's a lot bigger of a percentage that they can't really readily absorb as easily as some others. Then, if they're included, I think they need to be included in the $50 million. Under a similar, I don't think we can have them cut and then not include them. So one kind of ties to the other in my frame of mind.
Okay. Judge Kelly?
I would agree with Judge Thompson. If we are going to include them for this section, which I think we should, then we should make that cohesive for the other action items as well.
Any other comments as to including the Cluster 1 court? Yes, Neil.
Yeah, I would agree with including everybody.
Okay. Let me throw out, given Judge Thompson's point, why don't we take it in two steps? One, whether the Cluster 1 courts are included in some type of approach, deciding yet that it is the exact same percentage if it's the pro rata. We'll address them separately as we get to that. I think, let me suggest right now, we not have a formal motion. Let's just see if we have a consensus on it, and that way we may be able to include this later on when we know some of the answers to other questions. So why don't we, let me ask the question. Does anyone disagree that the Cluster 1 courts should be included in some way in experiencing cuts. So it sounds like we're all in agreement on that. Rebecca, going to your, would now be the time to decide whether we're going to go pro rata, everyone has the same percentage, asterisk, reg, cluster one, versus the split. Is this the right time to discuss and decide that?
Well, I think we may want to even circle back to the $50 million and talk about, you know, now that we've kind of gone through some of these scenarios and talk through that again. And I do think we should have separate motions for all of the pieces of this. But I guess what my intent was is to try and keep it where we're building a foundation of what we've done so that nothing gets kind of swept in with an approach that nobody expected because we are talking about a broad policy. So, you know, that's why I was recommending with the cluster one to separate it out, but we may want to circle back now and see if there's any further discussion on the revenue before we start breaking into the approaches on the cuts.
Okay, sounds good. Why don't we ask for comments regarding the $50 million one time. Go ahead, David.
So thanks, Judge. So the principle behind looking at the reductions and the fact that we were looking at applying the reduction, you know, consistently across the board, and of course we still have some discussion about what ultimately we're going to end up doing. The issue about the $50 million certainly is going to be helpful to have it rather than not have it. So I think all of us appreciate that. But the other reality is that this pandemic has been horrific for every one of us. And even though I'm a large court, right, I have a large court, after the first week of closure, we had 30,000 cases. I know that's a drop in the bucket compared to, you know, a court like LA's, but compound that after 1 week by almost 3 months of closure, we've got a ton of things to do. We've got a ton of money, just like many of the other courts, that we're going to be without, and we're going to have to make brutal decisions. And I'm talking about reducing our workforce, reducing the hours. Those are things that we're talking about on the table. Those are unpleasant for everybody. And so the $50 million is going to help us, a court, any court, that's going to be a reduction that's in California to help them deal with the backlogs. And so I think everybody should be able to receive some of that money. We still obviously, I don't think cluster one course should be exempted. That's my feeling. So if the question is, what do we do with the 50? I think we should come up with a formula so that all of the courts can benefit from that. For the last, I don't know how many years, WAFM 1.0 wasn't in existence, and 2.0 it came to be. But since that time, there's been a disproportionate benefit to courts that have been historically severely underfunded. So that's the 50-50 split. And I think that I appreciate that for many years, courts that have been woefully underfunded have struggled, but I'm recalling a discussion or a point that Mike made that there has been no relief but for new money coming in for courts like San Diego and other courts that have been on the contributing side of the house and have just experienced cutback management. I mean, reduction. So I think that in all fairness, all courts should be considered for the increase or the distribution of the $50 million. It is one-time money. It's not going to be built into the base because I haven't heard any of the discussion here. But I do think that is something that should be considered to go to everybody using a comparable formula. Again, simplicity and so on. So I'll stop with that.
Stephen, let me ask a question, though. When you started, I thought you were going to go down the road that the full 50 should be on a pro rata. And then
right.
there was some reference to a 50-50, which is in the recommendation by staff, that in the way we would deal with new money, the first 50% is to the courts below the average, and then the second 50% is to all courts. Therefore, every court would get something. Right. Which one are you pushing?
I'm leaning in the direction of 50 million goes a portion to all of the courts based on the funding formula that has been developed.
Okay.
The funding formula is used for reductions. The funding formula should be used for this one-time money, which is a little bit different than ongoing funding.
Okay. Rebecca? Thank you. Rebecca and then Judge Thompson.
I would also support that the full amount go out to the courts, and I won't propose a method at this point, but I do think that COVID is different in that we can't predict when a certain county is going to wind up having an issue or when they're going to have another flare-up, and where, you know, one county may have had a hot spot early on, the next county may not feel that pain until 2 months later. And for us to try and put a calendar to that with the distribution of assistance, I think is, you know, there's just no logic behind it. And so I would recommend that the entire amount is distributed.
Distributed on a pro rata basis.
I actually don't have a recommendation on the pro rata. I do believe it's workload. And so to that point, I think if we could come up with, something based on workload related to COVID, I think that would be the best.
But not a 50% goes to certain courts, and then the second 50% goes to all courts. You're saying whatever approach it is, whether it's on workload formula, workload allocation, whatever it might be, the full 50 million is handled the same way.
So I think with the existing approach to our workload methodology, I think that we have established that in order to bring the equity up for people on our everyday workload. But I don't think that the COVID workload is necessarily heavier in the courts below the line versus above the line. I'm not sure. I know we've asked Leah to do some looking at data around the workload. Maybe, I don't know if she's on the line, but my feeling is we should tie it to workload somehow, because I think backlog is workload. That's my feeling. And so I don't know if Leah has a recommendation on that or not, or if she's on the call. Brandy, do you know if she's on the call?
Hi, Rebecca. I'm here.
Oh, hi, Leah.
Hi. How are you? Thank you all. Real good. Thank you. Thank you all for letting me contribute. So, we did look at the types of information that first of all, we looked at the chief's policies that had been passed over the last few months, and considered whether or not we had data available statewide in GPSIS to be responsive to some of those, the branch actions. So looking specifically at things like extended deadlines, jury trials suspended, evictions and foreclosures suspended. And, you know, those of you who have worked with our group on GPSIS related matters, probably know that GPSIS was not intended to be a real-time data collection system, and so we don't have up-to-date information from all courts that would give us a sense of what types of matters were not currently being processed and what sorts of backlogs might be developed. And a further conflating factor is that, backlog is not just a matter of counting up all of the issues that may be suspended. It is also another contributing factor would be available workforce in the courts, feasibility of remote work, and any sort of local issues or decisions regarding operations. And what we've seen and observed have been, a range from courts that have, kept open some parts of their operations, whereas other courts have had to close, and then there seems to be everything in between. So in terms of actually quantifying a backlog, it would to get to numbers like that, we would have to rely on some sort of statewide survey type data collection to be able to get to sort of a more real time quantification of how courts have been impacted. And of course, the situation seems to be changing weekly, if not daily.
So Judge Buckley, can I raise my hand? I don't have a hand to raise, but can I raise my hand?
Yes.
So I would propose, I would even turn it into a motion, that we allocate all the money. We should not be doing it in pieces. I think based on what David and Rebecca stated, you know, a county that may not have hit it yet, that may in the future. I also agree that it is based on workload, and what Leah articulates is only part of it. There are so many complexities around dealing with COVID. You know, it's impossible to list all of the issues that are related, but, you know, I hate to even share the pain we have in LA, but over 50% of our inmates are in isolation. Our buses, we transport 3,000 inmates a day in 48 buses. How are we going to do that with social distancing? You know, there are issues I can't even explain that are painful in LA because of our size. So I'll get off the examples, but those are just some I want you to consider, that big courts have got problems, small courts have got problems. So this is my proposal. We allocate all of it. I think it should be 50% to all based on workload, and the other 50% should be those under the average line. This is not an offset. This is recognizing that those courts under the average funding line have more difficulty meeting the backlog requirements. The first 50% to all counties reflect the fact that we all have problems meeting the COVID-19 backlog problems, whether they're due to telework, whether they're due to social distancing, whether they're due to filings, whatever it is. And then the second 50% recognizes that those courts under the average funding line have less ability to deal with the backlog.
Nancy, did you raise your hand a moment ago?
I did, and it was really just kind of speak up on in concurrence with Rebecca and David, but we have a motion on the table now, so I'll withdraw that for now.
Is that a motion, Sherry?
It's a motion. For 100% allocation, the first 50% to all courts, the other 50% to those under the average line, recognizing it's specifically related to the backlogs that they have and that they have less ability to deal with them because they are under the average funding line.
Is there a second?
This is Mike Planet. I'll second that.
Okay, so Mike Planet seconds it. Let me throw out this question. Is everyone comfortable voting, discussing and voting on this without knowing the decision about how to handle the cuts? Do we want to jump over there as well, or what? David?
That was a point that I was just going to make. To me, that issue should be raised first. I think we have a sense of where the wind is blowing on the $50 million, but that's where I'm a little bit uncomfortable. So,
okay, Rebecca?
So I would just, I'm fine moving over to the conversation on the cuts. I will just say, you know, my comment on Sherry's motion would be that I think that COVID is different than a traditional workload and a traditional distribution of funds. I think this is for what we've all dealt with, and I would disagree that anybody was more prepared to deal with COVID than others. I would be more supportive of that type of a structure in the cuts than I would be in the $50 million. And so just before we leave the $50 million, I wanted to make that comment, and I'll turn it back.
Well, I didn't David say anyone was prepared for it, Rebecca, so I'd be curious how you think you'd measure backlog because people made different decisions.
Well, and I actually would not recommend distributing it based on a new count. I think that a pro rata based on our workloads, the way they are structured, a pro rata or an equal distribution, I actually think pro rata is more appropriate. But at the same time, I don't agree with creating new numbers. I think it's incredibly difficult. But I do think that our existing workload creates a certain proportion of COVID workload. And so I think that that kind of an approach would be where I would lead more than a 50-50.
So this is Mike. I'll withdraw my second until we kind of get to the discussion of the cuts. And
Judge Thompson, did you raise your hand? No? Okay, David, did you raise your hand now?
No. I was going to support Rebecca's position on the 50, but again, maybe we should take it in a different order.
Okay, Nancy?
And I think I will make a comment at this point, and that is only that I think the intent of the $50 million is to provide relief from the backlog in all of the counties, and I believe the intent of the governor and the legislature and not, you know, withdrawing that was that we all get the same equal amount in order to address our backlog, and I'm just concerned about what that would look like if we start playing with numbers too much.
I concur okay. with that.
Okay, thanks, Judge Thompson. Mike?
Yeah, so I'll withdraw my second for now until we have a discussion on the cuts.
Okay. Well, then why don't we go back to the cuts, and why don't we, again, look at the first big picture step of do we have it the pro rata, so whatever the percentage turns out to be as a net percentage. For our discussion, we'll just use the 10% number. For ease, or do we want it to be split with some ratio, whether it's 50-50 versus 30-70, we can discuss that on that. So let me ask for any comments as to whether it should be pro rata versus a split. David?
So I think it should be pro rata, 100% of that reduction be distributed to all of the courts. Is that your question?
Yes, that's oh, okay. Answering the question I was raising. And you also brought in the second question on that, and is do we include the
cluster
one courts? Other comments? Yes, Neil.
So I would tend to agree about pro rata, but the sort of the policy analyst in me kind of wants to make this comment. I know that, you know, you've had this policy discussion before about the parity and equity and trying to drive, you know, the funding of the courts at least to the statewide average or some point in the middle. These all three of the alternatives kind of, well, I guess the 50-50 kind of goes in the opposite direction after a while. And so I wonder whether there's another way of doing that kind of allocation where you're getting all the courts as close as possible to some point in the middle without moving other people down below the average and putting people above the average, and whether that's possible while at the same time trying to get an allocation, reduction allocation that sort of burdens everybody.
Well, I think it could be done with a band approach. You may have to really start looking at numbers to make recommendations as to how thick the band is or how many bands we have in it. So it could be part of the policy that the approach does not take a court that's above to below if that's your primary concern. So that definitely is a concept, but I would say if one is of that belief that with playing with it, you would want to have courts that are more underfunded versus the courts that are less underfunded, try to address that, that I think you would vote for the split, and then we can play with that. Other comments? Nancy.
Hello, thank you. I would support the split. I would also support working on some sort of a band, so those that are just barely above the band do not fall below the band in taking the reduction, and I also believe the Cluster 1 court should be included.
Rebecca.
Just on behalf of some of those folks that reached out to me before this meeting, there was a concern that the straight approach of our traditional new money formula could take some folks and leapfrog them over, and some folks leapfrog them below the band. And so I do think that if there is a split recommendation, that we should have some language in there regarding if we feel there should be a threshold that nobody goes over or under or whatever. So.
Other comments? Does anyone disagree that the Cluster 1 courts should be included? Okay. Entertain a motion.
This is David. I'd like to make a motion, if I may.
Yes.
So I would move that the reduction be applied to all of the courts by workload funding formula. It's similar to the funding methodology.
Okay, and the all of it that way.
All of it.
Okay, Mike.
Yes, I have a question. So when I'm trying to figure out. So looking at the staff report. What David's motion is proposing table 2 on page 16, is that right?
Yeah, I believe so. David, do you agree?
Yes.
And that's the workload formula?
Yes.
So where it ranges from 0 to minus 8.8%?
Well, it
or 6.8%.
I'll ask Brandy to clarify, but I believe that 8.8 is based on the numbers that were brought in by those six courts. Highest number could be higher, depending on how the numbers are. I may be wrong on that, but Brandy can obviously correct me.
They would also change because Cluster 1 are not included on the chart.
That's true, too.
Right. So the way that this is laid out, Table 2, the first one, based on a workload formula, so this is a reduction. Let me see. Hold on. So this is, yes, the reduction would be looking at court's workload formula, basically their need, and including Cluster 1 and taking the reduction there. Where the second table looks at what courts are actually getting their allocation and would reduce their allocation as such. So court B, for example, that line in this report represents courts that are over 100%. If we do it via the workload formula, they take a smaller hit reduction, where on allocation they would take a larger. And conversely, if we look at F, that represents courts that are in the 70% of funding range, we see that applying a pro rata reduction on workload formula, they have a larger reduction, where workload allocation would give them a lower reduction. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
And then just one other question. Then the split scenario that was mentioned would be table number 3?
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
Table 3, 4, and 5, depending on what split you do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Thank you.
I did not hear a second yet.
As I understand it, David, your position is table 2, 1, as opposed to table 2, what I'll call 2, on the right-hand side, being the allocation.
So now that you bring it up, it's more aligned with workload allocation would be 2-2.
Then I would second it.
Discussion. I know we've had comments, but with a specific motion, it's been seconded.
Again, just so I'm clear, so that's 8.3% reduction for 5 out of the 7 scenarios,
which will change a very slight amount when we include cluster 1. But cluster 1, the dollars you're talking about,
right,
are a very minuscule overall effect when you look at it.
Got it. Thanks.
So it certainly wouldn't change to by more than, I don't think, 0.1%.
Question?
Let me provide a comment that, and then Judge, go ahead, Judge Kelly, please, go forward.
I was just curious if we knew with a motion for table 2-2, if that would push anybody below the line or how that would work, because that was a concern that was discussed before about these reductions putting a court who are slightly above the midline below. Do we know if that would happen if we adopted this recommendation?
Judge Kelly, this is Judge Thompson. I believe it wouldn't take into account where the 50-50 took in those above the line, for instance, first, and then a reduction. This is a flat number to all reduce, and it'll bring a whole bunch of courts that are above the line, below the line, including those that are within the band. But it's at a similar amount applied as to all courts, so you don't get that split approach, which was a problem that I was discussing earlier.
Right. And so the only reason I bring that up is because then if we head back up to the 50 million and we're looking at courts and say we adopt the formula that's 50-50 for that formula, that puts more courts below that line based on this recommendation in this section of our meeting.
If you do the calculations,
right? When we all take a reduction, the average funding line is going to change because we're all getting cut.
Okay.
Right. Now, it may well be that the motion, if a motion's made that we do the 50-50 with the 50 million, you may say based on numbers as we speak or numbers after we do this pro rata workload allocation cut, but that could be a discussion later. My comment is that I think for political reasons, we've seen where courts that are above the average sometimes assert some political positions, and I think it's critical that we not have that happen. I think that on this approach, and we're taking just 1 year at a time, I could support the workload allocation pro rata. But to me, it underscores why in the 50 million allocation that we address those courts that are below the line. That's just a comment. But are there any other comments as to David's motion that was seconded by Judge Thompson? Nancy, please.
My only comment would be in going with the pro rata route, we are again not heeding the words in 2018 where we indicate that we would pay special consideration to the courts below the statewide average funding ratio.
Would you say that again, Nancy, please?
In supporting the pro rata table 2.2, we are not heeding the policy decision made in 2018, which is that any cuts will be addressed as needed with special consideration toward those courts below the statewide average funding ratio. If all are cut at the same amount, then we are not providing for those courts below.
Okay. Understood. With no further discussion, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Any opposed?
Opposed.
No.
Okay, so I just want to make sure that everyone voted yes except for Mike and Nancy. Does anyone disagree with that? Hearing no disagreement. Becky, you have got that down then as to the vote?
Got it. Thank you.
And obviously the cluster one courts are treated in the same workload allocation pro rata approach. Moving back to the 50 million, first of all, based on what was just discussed and decided, is there any further discussion before we, yes, Nancy?
The only clarification I have on that is table 2.2. Are we looking at the table that says WF, which is workload formula, or the table that is allocation? Just to be very clear, because I don't think that was in the motion.
I clarified it.
Yeah, if I may, so that what that shows is what your reduction percentage is if you look at your workload formula versus your allocation. So overall, okay. The 150 is a 6.8% reduction on the amount of money needed, and then it's an 8.2 reduction based on the amount.
Great, thank you.
Okay, so as to the 50 million, Rebecca.
So before we get into any kind of formal motions, we just want to double check again with either Leah or Zlotko or somebody just to make sure, are there any restrictions or I know David asked about reporting requirements, but is there anything that we need to consider in our approach to distributing this money to make sure that we are not compromising our opportunities for the fund.
So, Rebecca, this is Leah. Okay. Yeah, I just want to make one clarifying comment. I think I started to talk about, in response to your question about the types of data that we might have to quantify a backlog. One thing I want to make perfectly clear is that if we were to, we can take estimates of data we have and the known backlog that we see has built up in courts over the last few months and more than justify that the 50 million is, is a good estimate of the backlog in the court, and that we, if we used proxies such as the jury trials that would have been scheduled but have been put on pause, and the unlawful detainer cases that have been put on pause, that we can triangulate and estimate using the workload formula to more than sufficiently justify that 50 million, that at least 50 million in funds have been expended for backlog purposes. So I want to make sure that that's clear. While we cannot use that as an allocation method, we can at least triangulate that the cost of the backlog is justified.
You're good with that, Rebecca?
Yes, I'm good. Thank you.
Was there someone else that was going to say something? So hearing no initial discussion,
I don't mean to be difficult, but I made a motion before that was held.
Right. I was just going to get into that.
Okay, thanks.
Right. So I was just going to say that there is a motion made, a second was withdrawn. Does anyone wish to second the motion? Mike?
Yeah, just a question. So we're talking about table 2, column L. That's Sherry's motion.
I believe, Sherry.
Specifically, my motion is now that we've agreed to have a reduction allocation on a pro rata basis, meaning that all courts will take the same cut based on their allocation. For the money that's specifically related to COVID backlog, I agree that a backlog is related to workload. It seems to me that this money should be, the first 50% should go to all courts. The second 50% should go to those under the new average funding line, recognizing that we all have backlogs in one way or another. No one was able to prepare for this. We don't know when that next hotspot's going to be for someone. And those that are under the 50% average funding line will have more difficulty in working off whatever their COVID-related backlogs are than someone who's at or above the average funding line. So that is why I made the motion the way I did, because backlogs are in different places in different ways and will cause different challenges that will not be able to be measured through filings directly, because so much of it is also based on how big is your courtroom. Can you do five things at one time, or is it one thing at one time? So regardless of how much we'd like Leah and her great staff to try to identify backlogs, there isn't a way we can do it. So we then need to understand that backlogs are related to workload. We all are going to have challenges and backlogs, that those courts below the average funding line will have more difficulty. And so that's why I continue to make the motion that for this money, we have the 50% go to everyone and 50% go below the new average funding line, which will be significantly lower because of the allocation reduction that we just approved.
So, Sherry, let me clarify just a few things on that. First of all, that 50% that goes to everyone, it goes to everyone via the workload formula?
Yes.
And then I think you said in it that the 50% that goes to those courts below the average, that is the average analysis after we do the $168 million cut.
Yes.
And then if you look at page 11, it says here the recommendation was to bring all Cluster 1 courts up to 100% of funding need.
No.
How, if at all, Cluster 1 courts are dealt with differently with your motion?
They would not be. They'd be dealt with like everyone else, because we're all taking the cut, and now wherever we fall. Now, they're probably going to be falling above or at the average funding line anyway, because we're all taking a pro rata cut. And if they've been at 100%, they'll be at the higher level after the 10% cut anyway, whereas the courts that are under the line that are taking the same cut are going to remain under the line. So I would treat them the same, because right now we need to be united as one branch.
So in a sense, your motion is silent as to the Cluster 1 courts, because they're going to be treated the same as the other courts.
Yes.
Okay. Mike, I saw you raise your hand.
So I think that answers my question. So that is purely the workload formula that we're looking at, page 12, column 11. I mean, column L.
For the 50% that's for all courts.
So, Mike, I would say, let me say it again, that of the total amount, the first 50% go to all 58 counties. And then the second 50% of the funding goes to those below the new average funding line.
Got it. Thank you.
But I think, Sherry, we're on the same page that that first 50%, it goes to all courts, but we should include the language based on the workload formula.
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes, based on the workload formula.
Okay. So we have a pending motion. No second yet.
Yeah, this is Mike. I'll second again.
Okay. So we have that motion, 50% to all courts based on the workload formula, the second 50% based on to those courts below the average, which is calculated after the $168 million cuts are done. And I just had a question for you, everyone, and I just lost it.
Friendly question, Judge Buckley.
Yeah.
The second 50% follows the formula for the first 50% also for those below the average? Meaning we're using the same formula as we did for the initial 50 to everybody. Once we get those that are below the average, we're using the same formula then to redistribute the remaining 50. Is that correct? We're not picking a new formula.
Correct.
Based on workload.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, Judge Thompson, I do have to say that Leah and her group do take into account the distance from the average line and size. So, in other words, I don't know how to explain it very well. It is based on workload, but if you're farther away from the average, Leah, do you want to explain that a little bit? It's the same thing we've used for the last few years, and it's a little complicated.
It is, and actually Brandy and her group have done the calculations this year, so it might be better for Brandy to dive into that part. Would you, Brandy or Oksana?
Sure. This is Brandy. I've got it. Yes,
thank
as
you.
A matter of fact, now typically when we're applying the new funding, Sherry and Judge Thompson and members, we actually flip it. We usually allocate the first 50% to those under the statewide average. But yes, it is scaled to take into consideration both a court size and their distance from the statewide average funding level. So if you are a large court and you are the most underfunded, you would see a larger chunk of that for first 50%. And then based on the workload formula, we would then allocate the remaining funding to all. So Sherry, I did want to ask if you, is your recommendation meant to flip-flop those steps that we currently do under the workload formula?
No, I think that as much as we can be consistent, I'm looking
okay.
at this as, yeah, that way we're not trying to justify a new methodology, but I did want to let Judge Thompson know that it's a little bit more complex than just looking at workload.
And so I know Judge Conklin, you had your hand. Let me just throw two more things out. One, Sherry and Mike, the recommendation by the staff was to have 60% of the money distributed and then later 40%. Is the motion such that all $50 million is distributed at the outset?
Yes. Yep.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. And then everyone, we're all on the same page that this is one-time money. It's just a one-time distribution of $50 million, and it does not change where one court is as far as to being above or below the line and what its percentage is. That's going to be calculated separately. I just want to make sure we're on the same page. Any further? Judge Conklin.
Yeah, so could I just ask for clarification for the exact motion, considering as chair of TICBAC, I'm going to have to present it in a week, exactly what the motion is?
Sherry, you want to do it or you want me to?
Are you asking me to restate it, or do you want someone who apparently is more articulate than me to restate it?
You're always articulate, Sherry.
Yeah, sure. So it's basically the formula we use for all new funding, and that is you take 50% of the new funding and you allocate it based on workload to all 58 counties, and then the other 50% of the funding is allocated to those courts under the average funding line based on workload with some adjustments based on however Randy thinks we should best word it.
So stated another way, and I know we don't want to get too literal, but what that means is $25 million goes to all 58 courts.
Yes.
On whichever methodology you talk about. And then the remaining 25.
It's workload.
Right. The workload. And then the remaining $25 million only goes to those courts that are below the line.
Below the average funding line based on workload, recognizing that they have less money to deal with their COVID-19 backlogs than those people that are at or above the average funding line.
Okay.
And Judge Conklin, I would add to that that the determination of who's below the average is calculated after the 168 million cuts take place.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Thanks for the clarification.
One after one, the filing data is updated, and after two, after the allocation reductions are done, which then creates a new average funding line.
Any further discussion? Okay, why don't you unmute yourselves, please? And I'll ask for those in favor of the motion to say yay.
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 Aye. Yay.
Aye. And any opposed? Say no.
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 Okay. So we have two voting no. Okay. Becky, did you get that?
Brandy, was that Rebecca and David?
Yes. Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. We move now to item three, is it? Bear with me. Item four, the court interpreters program funding shortfall.
Oh, yeah, yes. Good afternoon, everyone. Item four of today's agenda is a revisit of FMS's recommendation from its February 20th meeting regarding a projected 2021 funding shortfall in the court interpreter program to take into consideration the $6 million general fund reduction proposed in the 2021 May revise. In addition to the May revisions, $6 million reduction, the May revise also includes $9 million ongoing general fund in 2021 for increased costs for court interpreters. This is an increase of approximately $1 million ongoing general fund from the January budget due to updated court interpreter costs. The May revision also includes $315,000 one-time general fund to purchase equipment for the newly established Video Remote Interpreting Program, or VRI. To offer a quick recap from this past February, the issue at that point was to address the 2021 projected shortfall of $11.1 million. That resulted in an FMS recommendation to use TCTF fund balance to address the shortfall. However, due to COVID-19, that recommendation, which was initially scheduled to be heard this past March, is now scheduled to be considered by TICVAC at its June 11th meeting. The expenditure and program balance information displayed on pages 20 and 21 respectively have been updated to incorporate the most current information, and as you will note, the 2021 estimated program balance now reflects a shortfall of approximately $17 million, which does increase to $23 million in fiscal year 21-22. In an effort to address the projected shortfall, we're asking that the Funding Methodology Subcommittee develop a recommendation to be considered at TICVAC during its June 11th meeting, and from there, TICVAC's recommendation will be heard at the Council's July 23rd and 24th meeting. Ultimately, this is to address shortfalls for fiscal year 2021 and 21-22. If there aren't any questions, I'll open the floor to discussion, and we have all of budget management and senior staff on the line to also address or answer any questions.
So, David.
Yeah, thank you, Judge. So one of the things I wanted to share with everyone is, if you recall, there was a subcommittee of FMS or work group that was formed to evaluate how to deal with the shortfall in funding in the fall. This working group, which consisted of Sherry Carter and Mike Planet, we began to explore different solutions. Among the solutions that we were contemplating was applying a reduction consistent with the shortfall of funding in this account, and that the application of a reduction would be something that would affect all of the courts. Although it is a fund that is basically a reimbursement to courts based on expenditures in this area, there is some level of consistency, I would say, in how much each court spends every year in this area. And what we were contemplating was looking at applying a equitable reduction to each court's reimbursement amount, more on a allocation approach formula, so that everybody can kind of pitch in and tackling the shortfall that we had. That concept was kind of shelved in light of the fact that there was available space in the Chaco Trust Fund, and we had used some of the fund balance to balance the budget going into next year. Clearly, the fund condition of the Chaco Trust Fund is not in a situation to support a backfill. And one of the things that we did very recently, a few days ago, Mike Planet, Sherry Carter, and myself talked about different approaches in dealing with the shortfall. I think the consensus was we need to reduce expenses. We need to reduce the amount of monies that would be made available to the courts. So all of us would have to come up with an approach to balance the budget. One of the things that we did not have, unfortunately, is data that tracked how the monies were spent in each of the courts and aligned it with workload. And that's one of the things that I would recommend we continue to delve into before we make a recommendation to the to TICBAC next week. But it's something that we can certainly evaluate and make a recommendation. Keep in mind also that the pandemic has actually slowed a lot of the proceedings that have been originally scheduled, so we're not going to necessarily have a good sense of how much money each of the courts would receive in conjunction with the workload, so that we're asking that this item be deferred until we have additional information, and it may exceed the schedule or the scheduled placement of this item on the agenda for next week TICBAC meeting. So we're asking if it's possible for us to gather some more information. Certainly there's going to be some information that's going to come forward with the August revise and such at a point such that we can make recommendations for the courts, let's say in September, so that the courts can make the necessary adjustments in their operations. So I guess my request is that in light of this information, we ask that no decision be made just yet, but defer the item until we can finish our analysis in the next month or two.
Would it be consistent with what you said, David, as far as giving a recommendation to TICBAC and then ultimately to the council that there is sufficient appropriation to cover the reimbursement through at least September, including the fact that there will be reduced use of interpreters, and that we ask that a recommendation be made to TICBAC and Judicial Council as of the September Judicial Council meeting?
Yes. I believe that the way the funding is provided in this account, it's appropriated, and we would certainly have sufficient funds in this account to support activities through December very easily. Certainly at the end of the year, that would be a completely different situation if, in fact, we do not make any changes in the allocation / reimbursement methodology to the different courts.
So assuming we backtrack to an August TICBAC meeting, does that give the three of you enough time to make a recommendation, or is the reality that you might need a couple more months?
No, I think we would have enough information available to make a comprehensive recommendation, certainly to this body and TICBAC.
Other comments, thoughts? Judge Thompson?
Question. Recognizing this is, I think, an underfunded program, has been, yet we're expanding services and we're, receiving cuts. I thought there was a lack of data around priorities, meaning mandatory 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Given that it's underfunded, are you going to be able to get the number of what I'll call requests for reimbursement based upon those priorities by that point in time? Because I think in the big picture, unless the state comes up with additional money for what we have recognized is a very diverse group that we serve and a need for this, that there are going to be categories for which there is simply no money for reimbursement. And what we don't want to have is one court utilizing reimbursement for tier 1 through 5 because they can and get it in, and one court not able to use more than tier 2 for reimbursement. You don't want to create that mismatch throughout the state.
That's a very good point, Judge Thompson. So the way we would approach this is to try to formulate some very clear formulas that reflect how monies are being spent. So let me answer it in this fashion. Currently, the way courts are reimbursed is whatever they spend, they essentially get, provided the funds are sufficient. I think there may be opportunities for courts to adjust the manner in which they make court interpreter assignments. And the challenge has always been, if there's not a significant, if there isn't a need to make changes in practice because it's always going to be reimbursed, then it's difficult for efficiencies to be implemented. Let me say it that way. So the bottom line is $17 million cannot be absorbed by the balance in the trial court trust fund. We're going to have to make changes in our processes, unless maybe in the August revise more monies come in. But the fact is, if a court decides that they want to provide services in one area that is not mandated, they can certainly use their local funds to do that. But we all have to take a reduction in the monies that we have, because $17 million cannot be absorbed by just a handful of courts. It has to be distributed fairly among all of them, and all courts are going to have to make changes in practices, irrespective of what their priorities are, because that's the only way for us to have a balanced budget. We need to reduce expenses, and that, of course, means that courts are going to get less in the area of funding / reimbursements.
Judge Conklin?
And I agree with all this. So just, again, from a tick-back perspective, if perhaps language could be included in the report that's going to come to tick back next week, that, as I understand it, says defer this, that trial court should be on notice that there's a potential that one quarter into the fiscal year, these dollars are gone. That, in other words, if a decision is made that the TCTF cannot absorb any of this and all the trial courts need to, then they've only got 9 months left to adjust their budgets to absorb all of their interpreter funding. So I'm wondering if just maybe it goes without saying, but sometimes you need to say it.
Yeah. So that's a very good point, Judge Conklin. And obviously trying to make up the difference in less time is more difficult for all courts. I think the collective group of this subcommittee has concluded we're going to have to reduce the monies available to courts for interpreters, and they need to start preparing for a reduction in services. The question is, how do we apportion the reduction to all of the courts using a formula? We have never done this, and we want to make sure that we don't miss any details so that we can do it in an equitable and well thought out method. So that's really what I think is important. So the recommendation, I guess, at this point, was to put everybody on notice that we are going to be recommending a reduction in the monies that would be made available to all of the courts, and we simply need additional time to formulate the details of how the reductions would be made to the courts. But we have, as Cottrell mentioned, $17 million in any way, shape, or form, you know, it's going to be pretty significant in the way that we provide interpreter services in our courts.
And Judge Thompson, if I understood one of your concerns, and that between now and September, some courts may be using interpreters on all types of matters and sort of get an advantage there. The unfortunate situation that probably alleviates that concern is that courts are not going to be able to do much other than maybe criminal.
Right.
You know, I don't think there are going to be any trials in civil, and et cetera. So I don't think anyone's going to take advantage of this. And then, Judge Conklin, I don't believe we will run out of money in the first quarter, but I agree strongly that we should be advising the courts that in this fiscal year, maybe early in the fiscal year, the funds may be gone. The funds will be gone.
Right. And I think your points that are well taken is, you know, it's always been sort of a wink and a nod, don't worry, this will get covered. Not this time.
Right.
This is not going to get covered. Yep. Thanks.
Sherry and Mike, being part of that group, any other comments?
No, I agree with everything that's been said, and we'll certainly work with David and Mike to try to come up with solutions. It is too bad, and I know Nancy is, she doesn't know she's staring me in the eye, but she is, because this has been our biggest fear, is that we would expand beyond the mandated areas and have a cut. And, of course, the courts that are below the average funding line are going to be in a much worse shape than everyone else, because they're going to have to take the cuts from already not having enough money. But
okay. Yeah, Mike, did you say have something?
No, I just agree. We knew this day was going to come years ago when we first addressed the issue, and it's here, and it's not a can that we can kick down the road any farther, I don't think.
Okay. Becky, were you all set with the language? Oh, Brandy, I'm sorry. I'm looking at Rebecca. Brandy, all set with the language?
Sorry, I was muted. Yes, I am.
Great. Okay, so that gets through the agenda.
Oh, Judge Buckley, I'm sorry. Did we have a formal motion on that?
We did not. David, do you want to make that motion? Or you want?
Sure. I make a motion that we recommend to the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee that we not make an affirmative recommendation to reduce the allocation to the different courts in Program 4545 until we've had an opportunity to develop a methodology to make reductions to each of the courts. And furthermore, we also advise all of the courts that in light of the fund condition of the Trial Court Trust Fund and the historical funding or expenditure levels, that we inform courts that reductions are imminent, and that courts should prepare for a reduction in funding, and that amount will be identified in September. September/August.
I'll second that motion.
Okay, Rebecca seconds. And I don't think it has to be part of the motion, but I do think we want to let TICBAC and the council know that we are confident there's sufficient funding to get us to September. But that doesn't have to be part of the motion. Any discussion as to the motion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay. Rebecca, anything else for today?
Nothing else. Thank you.
Judge Conklin?
Just that TICBAC is a week from Thursday, and I'm looking very forward to all of you attending and candidly discussing what we discussed today. It was a great discussion. Thank you.
Great. Anybody else? Anything else? Let's go out thanking the staff for, again, great job with very big time pressure and very challenging issues. Everyone,
here.
We were saying stay safe and healthy for only the pandemic. Stay healthy and safe for everything.
Yeah.
We'll talk next week, everybody.
Thank you very much.
Bye, everyone. Thank you.
Recording has stopped.